really cool.
Bonjour and welcome to the Rosbif's Rugby Podcast, the rugby podcast talking about French rugby, the top 14, Pro de Deux, National and all the fun stuff in between, the towns, the cities, the grub and the bars of France. I am Rob and I am doing the intro this week because I am not joined by Richard Crony. Some say that he has gone on a honeymoon 15 months after he actually got married. Others say he did 3 months of being the other half of Rosby's Rugby and he found my incessant badgering about French, all things French rugby, a bit too relentless and needed a 2 week break in Costa Rica to be cut off from all technology so that he couldn't hear from me. I'll let you decide which one of those is the truth. But I'm not on my own. I am joined by someone who was chosen by Richard. I kind of chucked a couple of options out there and we chose someone for authenticity reasons was your reason for being selected. And I am joined by someone who was mentioned on last week's podcast, Rhys Jones. Rhys Jones, welcome.
Hi, Rob. How are you? I'm very well, thank you. It's absolutely great to be on the podcast and know that once again, I'm here to tick the diversity box by being the authentic voice. But, you know, I may...
Yeah, we're like the BBC. We have to kind of squeeze in a regional accent just to keep everyone happy.
Yeah, well, I feel a bit like Jonathan Agnew in that big news today that he's re-signed, you know, just to keep the older clientele of BBC Sport happy. But, you know, I'm a long-term fan of the show. I've listened to every episode. I've got all the merchandise, you know, and much as... You know, and as listeners will know, obviously, I'm a friend of yours and Richard, and much like everything else in Richard's life, he's coming for the early part, then gone away, and I'm coming to pick up the pieces. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, it's a strange time to go on holiday, isn't it? Kind of third week into a podcast, arguably, if you're focusing on French rugby, the weekend of the year not to go away, you know, kind of before two back-to-back weekends of European or Champions Cup action, as we have to call it now. You were selected, Rhys. You were selected for authenticity reasons because you and I, together on a romantic weekend, went to France at the beginning of March. We went to Montauban and saw Argent's victory against Montauban, and then we were at Toulouse v Cast. And that was your kind of first proper weekend of back-to-back Pro de Deux and top 14 games. How did you find it? Talk to me.
Yeah, you know, it's my first proper back-to-back weekend. I've seen some great French rugby games live in Toulouse, Bordeaux, but they were more as part of the trips, not the centre of the trip. So it was great to go away and taste it. And it's just, particularly being Welsh, I don't know if I've got perhaps there's something we've lost in it, but there's something I really love about French rugby, particularly I love the game of Montauban because it's just got such an incredible community feel. It's like the whole town is out, the atmosphere is there, and just like families, younger people, you know, all ages are out there. And
it's the whole demographic of society, isn't it? We were sat next to, how old was that bloke?
I was just about to bring him up. You know, he was 90 something, and it was a great story because he'd originally, and sadly his wife had passed, but he'd moved to France like 40 years ago, and he'd been coming with his wife for the last 40 years. And you know, the whole town's in there and it's vibrant. It's got that sense of like pride of place. It's not just about the rugby, it's about the place and the connection. And sort of my longing for Welsh rugby is sort of something we've lost. So going over there and experiencing that is just incredible. And I mean, the atmosphere is second to none. The songs, I mean, as I said to you, they're all from the same backing tune, but it's still quality stuff. And I mean, the food as well, and the booze. What I suppose you don't get for those who haven't been out and sampled a weekend is it's not just the rugby. Obviously, the rugby is a huge part of it, but the before the match, you know, we stayed in Montauban and indeed the Ernest Vallon for a good few hours afterwards, and it is still
you were in the Ernest Vallon until for about 5 hours afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, and it was, and also, you know, when you're sitting there and you've got the brass bands and you can really feel the atmosphere in the stadium. It's difficult not to get into it. But then, you know, you had the cast band would come over and play with them. And I'm not saying there's rivalries don't get spicy, but there was just that everyone was out to have a good time, soak up the atmosphere.
Zero animosity, like right at the end. Lights up at the Ernest Vallon in the Apre match, like the people going hardest were still the cast fans. Like,
yeah, there's
it
no...
was incredible.
Yeah, exactly. It's incredible. And you probably, and it's rare you'd find that in sort of British sport, I suppose, more so in rugby than you would in others. But the atmosphere is incredible. And to be honest, I enjoyed the Montauban match more, which I'd recommend anyone go there. And obviously, my beloved Eugène came with victors with a last minute Thomas Vincent penalty, but conversion, sorry. But it's just, it's a really magical day. And I tell you what, if you live in France, that is really something to look forward to every weekend. Through the winter period, because you just know every Saturday, whether you're home or away, you've got a full day of just atmosphere, great food, great conversation
it's
with people.
Enjoyment. Like, it's just pure enjoyment day from start to finish, isn't it?
It really is. And I think as well, you know, my pidgin French is at best, but people just get chatting to you and they want to get involved, they want to chat. They want to make new friends, and it makes you feel very welcome, even if you're just there for the weekend. So, do you know what? It will not be my last trip away there. I can tell you that for free.
Play your cards right, and you might get some inside track on some Rosby's rugby tours. But I'd like to highlight that Reece is very much a fill-in for Richard. He has not claimed Richard's spot. And the biggest giveaway of this was the fact that you fully, possibly more than anybody else, fully fell for our April Fool's gag on our social media accounts. You were full of praise for our supposed contract with TNT Sports. The amount of people that believed it, I'm sorry. So we started last week with an apology for technical issues. This week, I guess we've got a bit of an apology for all the people that believed our April Fool's. It is a dream for Rosbeefs to be kind of teamed up with whichever broadcaster French rugby moves to and kind of be on the ground reporters or whatever. But unfortunately, that was an April Fool's. And I'm taking it as a big compliment to my video editing skills, which I thought was absolutely budget. And I thought that alone was going to be make it obvious that it was an April Fool's, but apparently not.
Well, I thought maybe, you know, first of all, is it a crime to be happy for your friends? Well, you make your own mind up, listeners. But second, I thought maybe TNT Sports were going for the more gritty line of, you know, something a bit up and coming, a bit more gritty, unpolished. But, you know, also...
They should. If they are to take the top 14 coverage. I mean, we don't know who is going to get, or if anyone is going to take it. I think we're pretty certain it's not going to be Viaplay next year. They have kind of stopped showing as much of it on the actual TV channels. It's still available on the app, but from what I hear, Viaplay are pulling out of the UK generally, not just kind of relinquishing the kind of top 14 rights. And that kind of April Fool's, I guess, has some entrees to our agenda. But our agenda generally this week, we're gonna talk about a few April Fools and some good news bits at the start as entrees. We're going to review this weekend's top 14 games. We're then going to dive into Pro Day 2, which is what Reece is particularly excited about. Have a little preview of next week's games in Pro Day 2. And then the big thing is obviously the previews of the Champions Cup games and the Challenge Cup, which we will delve into in quite a lot of detail. We'll give some recommendations for how to have a good day out at some of those French grounds. And we will pepper in a couple of potential doubleheaders you could have done or you could still do if you are travelling to those places.
And because we are going into that into so much detail, that will be in a separate podcast on our stream, on our feed. So tune into that if you just want the European Cup weekend previews and previews of things to do in France in those cities.
And we will, of course, finish off with some pity fours and some digestives. We do have some voice notes as well from Richard Crony, which will be peppered into the podcast, which are interesting. So, even though he's in Costa Rica, we won't be without him, and you will get your slice of Richard Crony this week. But just to kind of segue us into the kind of review of everything, I wanted to look at a few of the best April Fools that I saw on social media. Ours, whether or not people think it was good, I'm sorry to anyone that was offended by it. There was a lot of kind of the quite standard ones from like Rugby Pass and a few of the kind of more mainstream big followings went for the whole Seven Nations with Georgia, and actually it's the Eight Nations with Georgia and South Africa and that sort of stuff. There was, I think it was Rugby Rama went for DuPont going to the NFL after the news about Lewis Rees Summit last week. That was actually quite believable. I saw one of kind of heralding Romain Entermac's return to the Toulouse side, that he was going to make himself available for the Paris Olympics and the Sevens, which would be pretty impressive after such a spell out of injury. It'd be quite a cool story, but it was clearly an April Fool. But my favourite one was around the GIF quota in French rugby. So the GIF quota, you have to have a certain amount of players in your squad, match day squad, and across an average across the season that have been trained in France, so kind of come through a French academy. There are various ways around it. That doesn't necessarily mean French players. It also means certain French players are not GIF. For example, the most obvious one, Paul Valencia is not GIF, for example, because he joined after he was old enough. And I know Scott Spedding couldn't get a contract towards the end of his career because he wasn't GIF. But the April Fools I saw was that the GIF quota was being expanded to include another quota, which was the mullet quota. Well, that's at least what my dodgy French translation was kind of making out of it, based on the photo and the words. And so each team had to have a certain amount of mullets in their match day squad. And the quality of mullet had to be of a certain level. I think that was Pro Day de News on Instagram that pulled out that one. I enjoyed that.
And also there's a really easy way to fill that, right? You just charter a plane to Perth. You just sweep up everyone who's working in the mines, because everyone there is knocking a mullet on the tash.
Well, presumably, yeah, but you've got to fulfill your mullet quota alongside your GIF quota. So you actually need to kind of go to the outback and just sweep up like 16-year-olds that look like they might be good at rugby, and then bring them over.
Well, I suppose,
or go to Devon.
Devon will work as well. I mean, you've only just got to knock around a few of the rural areas. You're going to pick up some general monsters that have got a mullet, and I think, you know, you just hope for the best then. But I think it's a nice touch, you know. I quite like to see that in.
Yeah, I mean, luckily neither of us are rugby players looking to play in Pro Day 2 or the top 14, because we would not be GIF or mullet.
No, my mullet days are long past me, it's fair to say. For those listeners, I've got the old Prince William on top, just with a little less. So I wouldn't be quite cutting the mullet look. But, you know, in happier times, I might have made GIF.
And then the big news, which was real news, because it came out on the 2nd of April, and there was a lot of stuff on Twitter about whether it was kind of the timing of it. But it was quite a shock announcement from Poe and Sam Whitelock about his retirement. So he signed a 2-year contract, which started after the World Cup. So in theory, he is at Poe until the end of the season in 2025, so summer 2025. And he announced this week that he will be stopping at the end of this season. He's retiring. He said that he wanted to go out on his terms. And I think there's a sense that he felt like he was declining. It was interesting because his brother actually signed a contract extension. His brother, who captains Poe quite regularly, I think he might be the official club captain. It's either him or Gorgadza, maybe. But he announced his retirement. So it's obviously not Sam Whitelock being disgruntled with Poe or not having a good time because he's there playing there with his brother. I think it is just his body starting to give up. And a lot of the reaction online and on Twitter was very much like, hell of a shift, mate. Thanks for the memory sort of thing. Like, New Zealand's most capped ever player. Pretty good shift, regardless of what you've achieved. You know, he was a point away from being the first player to win 3 World Cups. He's appeared in four World Cups.
Yeah. So
World Cup finals. Three World Cup finals at least, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously then they got bronze in 2019.
Yeah.
And I think the youngest New Zealand ever to reach 100 Test caps.
See.
I think so, yeah.
He's still like 30. I think he is now like 35. But for a long time, he was like, how is he still that young?
Yeah, it's like, do you know when you're a kid and your parents seem to stay, or your grandparents or whatever, seem to stay the same age every birthday? But he is, you know, he's one of those players. It's great to see somebody who realizes the pressures in their body, wants to go out when he's still at the top. But he's such an iconic player, right? A proper lock forward. The partnership with Rodri Hrdalík is sort of one of the great lock partnerships. And it's one of those things where it's so sad to see somebody of that ilk and somebody of that achievement retire. But as you say, it's sort of, you summed it up quite nicely in the Twitter thing there. It's a hell of a shift. It really is. Yeah. You know, he is a proper icon, not just of New Zealand rugby, but world rugby. And nobody loves a lock forward more than I. And he is truly one of the best.
I think for me, for as a Poe fan, as we discussed last week, there is a sense of shame or like what might have been.
Ooh.
Because when the signing was announced last season, I kind of said in jest, oh, Poe are going to win the top 14, which at that point when they were scrapping down in 12th, 13th, was obviously fanciful. And then at the start of the season, we were top of the league at one point, and we've obviously fallen away. We actually had lost 4 league games in a row in Sam Whitelock's first 4 league games. But you bring someone of that culture into your club, and you expect them to instill parts of their culture and parts of their success, which is, you know, he seems very much of that ilk. You look at what he's done with the Crusaders down the years as well, not just the All Blacks. And in one of the early games, I'm pretty sure they actually conceded a pick and go or a tap and go try from a penalty because he was busy kind of explaining like how to set up a maul to someone, partly frustrated that people weren't on his level maybe. But I'm hoping that we kind of get the best out of him this year. And it's interesting because I was, as a Poe fan, like, and we're about to move on to the top 14 games, the glaringly obvious weakness in Poe's game is maul defence. And you think, who in world rugby would you... I mean, Scott Cummins from Scotland is obviously number one maul defender, then probably Richie Gray, and then probably Johnny Gray. But Sam Whitelock's pretty high up on the list of people you want setting up mauls in attack, all of that kind of tight thigh nuts and bolts. He's your man in world rugby, really. So it's a bit of a shame. I'm pretty sure we've got Joel Kapoku coming at the end of next season, which is kind of cool. I'm hoping Sam Whitelock stays around a bit. But if not, let's kind of get as much out of him while we can. We've got a couple of young locks as well, Hugo Origi. But on to top 14 games. The weekend, the game of the weekend was Toulouse v Poe.
100%. I mean,
the storyline of this game, like the kind of flow of point scoring was crazy, really.
I was going to say as well, 31 is proving to be a pretty unlucky number for Poe. 31-28 versus Clermont last week, or 31, and then 31-29 versus Toulouse this week. But what a game. I mean, Tony D at 10, into Mac back, last minute try, interceptions, like, it had a bit of everything in terms of flow of points, in terms of just drama.
I think to get as close to, you know, needing a try 2 minutes out from Toulouse to at the Stade Ernest Vallon, that's the Poe Instagram account was very much like brave effort. Like, there won't be that many teams getting close to, you know, 2 minutes to go in the lead at Stade Ernest Vallon. Again, and as you said, you know, Dupont was playing. He started at 10. They then made the most of the rolling subs rule, which is you can go off and come back on, but you can't come back on in the position you were on before, which when you've got a bloke who is the best nine in the world and he started at 10 is quite handy as a replacement to come back on at nine when you've replaced him with France's first choice fly half. Entomac came on after about 55 minutes, I think. He looked okay. There were flashes of the Roman Entomac we know, but he looked rusty, which is understandable. He didn't look quite at his best. He looked a little bit bulkier, let's say. His hair was looking thick and lush, and he was looking a bit thick and lush, which I think is quite understandable with any player that's had a big knee or leg injury. They do tend to kind of come back a bit bulky. We saw it with Owen Farrell. We certainly saw it with Johnny Bairstow in the Ashes, didn't we?
Maybe it was those pints we saw Roman Entomac chopping in the long
I was trying to think, was he drinking? Was he drinking?
I'm pretty sure he was.
Tucking into some Pierre Peck in the Apres match.
He was tucking in it.
But he got a lovely reception, and you kind of remember that. I was kind of like, God, do they love this bloke? And then you kind of remember that he scored an absolutely unreal try at the death to win them a top 14 title last year. So I think that's kind of fair enough. Poe were great, though. The guys that I love watching are with the same guys. They're the same guys every week. Like Gaeton with an unbelievable line for that try and the pace.
I was going to bring this up. That try has just got it all. Like, great ball. As he goes into tackle, no look, pass back, the lie. It's the Cron d'Espresse, Gilton. It's just the slickest move, and the pace, the line, is actually mouth-watering, and sort of that dream 10, 12, 13 link-up, and it just worked perfectly. You just don't imagine many defences stopping that, regardless how well you set up. It was just so perfectly executed. And I saw it was fourth in try of the week, and I was like, it just felt like number one to me for some reason.
Yeah. The Decron at 12 is, you know, he's never going to play for France, but I liked watching him play. He just was so straight, fixed everything so dead straight, and that was just a great example, like out the back to d'Espresse. That angle from Gaeton. The other man, Teo Atasogbe, he's been a little... I've started to doubt him over the last few weeks. He's been a little bit shaky defensively. I think when we were in the bar, we caught the end of on Rugby Plus in the Apres match at Stade Rennes-Vallon. There was some particularly kind of uninterested tackling of Makalu from Teo Atasogbe. But he was brilliant in this game. Like his kicking was brilliant. Under the high ball, he looked great. He got an interception. He set up another one. He scored two. He set up another one with a massive kick and then just haired after it and put so much pressure on. And that was the try that put Poe in the lead towards the end. They really was a valiant effort, but you just can't. It's so hard to hold on against that Toulouse team. You know, it was kind of Miafu hammering away, Willis hammering away. The calibre of player they have in that forward pack, just you've got to be so good for so long to keep them out. And ultimately, Toulouse just had enough towards the end, and Poe just couldn't quite hang on.
Would it be fair to say, and you know, Toulouse probably one of, if not the best attacking side in Europe, they've got that fantastic forward pack. And I think, I don't know if I'm being a bit mean to Poe here, and obviously I really do like them, but feel a couple of tries were a bit of a giveaway from Toulouse as well. You know, that last try was pretty rogue. I mean, the Atasogbe second,
lobbed it in his own 22.
Yeah. And this Atasogbe second try, you know, it looked like Toulouse were going to score, and then there's the interception, and taking nothing away from Poe at all, but they sort of took a couple of, and fair play, they took a couple of chances, but whether it was ever really in doubt, I don't know. Maybe I'm being a bit mean, but...
You get, in an away performance in any sport, really, you have to kind of take your chances in that sort of environment. On the Atasogbe intercept, he got one last week, and it's kind of like, I'm not going to compare him to Brian Abana, but you're kind of like, oh, this is just a quick guy who catches the ball and it's poor attack. But actually, when it kind of happens regularly, you do start to think, well, maybe maybe this guy is actually a really good defender and he's just good at picking him out, and that's why they score. I think, yeah, I mean, they are the fourth team this season in 10 games to deny to lose an attacking bonus point at home. So Toulouse scored 5 tries, Pau 4. So not enough of a margin for Toulouse to get that attacking bonus point. I think ultimately they finished the game with both halfbacks and a fullback who played from the France under 20s this year away at Toulouse, and you lose by 2 points. So I was, no one was expecting a Pau win. So yeah, like Toulouse were always, well, maybe they were always going to win it, but I think that relentlessness shone through in the end.
Should we have a quick break
Yeah,
just
I think so.
before we go into the other top 14 games, and we'll be right back with all the rest of the action.
So I think we've done Pau v Toulouse or Toulouse v Pau in quite a lot of depth. Were there any games that stood out to you? Actually, should we hear from Richard Crony first? We do have some voice
Yes.
notes.
Yes, let's hear from him.
Let's see if we can get these to work for you.
Hello, mate. Trust all well. I thought I would take a couple of minutes out of my very busy pina colada drinking schedule to give a few light on detail, high on opinion thoughts about some of the rugby over the last few days.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I could hear that perfectly. So
Oh,
I
right, well,
think
that'd be good. Wonderful.
so perhaps listeners will be chuffed to hear that they're going to get some Richard Crony related content all the way from Costa Rica.
My big challenge to you is whether you can hear the panting, which grows increasingly heavier the more these voice notes go on. But we're gonna get his thoughts on one of the top 14 games first.
Firstly, having obviously seen none of the rugby, a massive shout out to Stade Français for their whatever it is, fifth, sixth, seventh away win, descending top of the pile. What a season they're having. Really effective, very clever players, obviously doing something right. I don't know if having or not having one of those sort of French rugby cathedrals as your home ground makes a difference, but clearly they're a level above at the moment in terms of getting away wins. So big raps to them, big raps to Joris Sagoms with the boot and bringing back the drop goal, or continuing the rebirth of the drop goal as well.
Interesting. It was Stade Français's sixth away win of the season, and that is a large reason you'd have to think as to why they are top of the pile. Because, as we know in French rugby, away wins are not that common. But actually, I think that's a bit of a misperception. But six away wins is seriously impressive, even at 13th placed Montpellier. Did you catch any of this game, Rhys?
Yeah, I caught a little bit of it. I mean, mostly the
Did you?
highlights. Yeah, I did. I
What?
think not
How long were
a
the highlights? 30 seconds.
no, the highlights were about 7 minutes, mate, but because there was not a lot to watch in this game for the highlights.
I watched this game either side of Harlequin. So I watched the first half, and then I watched Harlequins v Bath, and then I watched the second half. Harlequins Bath fit was like 33-3 at half time. Harlequins were 40 points to 3 up, and they ended up hanging on for victory at the end. It was one of the wilder games, and to watch the contrast in that game and Montpellier 10, Stade Français 12 at GGL Stadium in Montpellier was quite some contrast.
I mean, not that. I mean, to be fair to Stan, I mean, Richard obviously really insightfully said they're obviously doing something right, which has probably hit the nail on the head. Perhaps not as flashy as some of the other big beasts in the top 14, but they're just getting the job done, aren't they, week after week. Not a great, like, it's harsh to say not a great result for Montpellier, but it's. With Perpignan winning, like it's put them just a couple of points behind in 13. Do you want to know
It's a
something?
weird one, isn't it? Like, in isolation, the 13th place team losing by 2 points to top of the league at home in any other league, it's like, oh, it's good effort. But it's just the names at Montpellier and the money behind it and everything we know about Montpellier and the fact they were kind of looked like they were on an uptick. I don't know whether it was a horrible game. Like, maybe they just lost to a good team and it was a pretty scrap, it was pretty hard fought win for Stade Français, and Montpellier perhaps made it hard for them, or I don't know. It's quite a hard one to interpret because of the basket case that is Montpellier.
I was going to say, as Stade are a really good side, and most other, as you said, most of the leagues you chalk it up to actually putting a good performance to get it that tight. It's quite an attritional game, but Montpellier flattered to deceive quite a lot, don't they? I mean, they are should be doing better than they are, but I don't know. If this
it's
is
not a good. It's not a good weekend for them. Like it no. is. Because not, the other teams won at home, they won games at home to higher ranked teams, and that does leave them 4 points adrift of Lyon in 12, which yes. is not miles with six games to go, obviously, but it's a gap. It's a gap that they wouldn't want.
It's a gap they wouldn't want, and it's always difficult to make a lot of points up. I think you know away from home, by and large, you're probably I know. There's a conversation to be had about whether it's a misconception that, you know, most people lose when they're away, but, you know, the stats tell you they generally do. So where are they going to pick up these points where Lyon, Perpignan aren't? Also, interestingly, I don't know if you know this, and I sort of got this in my reading earlier this week. Richard obviously had quite a bad time at Montpellier, as I recall, or on yes. the way to Montpellier. Interestingly, do you know Montpellier is one of the leading places in France for making violins? Which seemed quite apt given Richard's woes there. And so, and sort of a little bit of metaphor for Montpellier's woes a little bit as well, because, you know, they've got some of the names, they've got the money back in, and they just can't quite get the job done. So I thought that was quite a nice metaphor for both Richard's time there, as he likes to talk about it quite a bit, and also their season thus far.
Yeah, a bad weekend. I don't think we're not writing Montpellier off yet, because there's still a decent amount of time to go in that relegation scrap.
Yeah, I tell you who, if we moving on, who we can write off.
I tell you, I'm going to move on to a different game.
Yeah, go for it.
Because I know where you want to go. But a point that Richard made there is Stade Français don't play in one of the great cathedrals of French rugby. The Stade Jean Bouin is a new stadium. It's very pink. It looks very cool, but they don't sell it out. It's not this kind of fortress that packs out every week with a loyal fan base. Like those Paris teams just don't have that sort of support, which brings us on to one team. And does that correlate to their good away form? I know I've heard other players, so Jim Hamilton talked about it with his time at Gloucester. The Shed was amazing. King's Home generally was amazing. They could get up for home games so easily because the passion of their fans, it was sell out. It was ferocious support. And then away, they just didn't have that inspiration, and they struggled away from home. Stade Français kind of don't have that. Maybe that's part of their reason, as well as their good coaching and teamwork and structure to their game. Maybe that's the reason why they're doing well away from home. One team who has not won away from home all year, and in fact has now lost a home game, albeit away from their home stadium, where they are unbeaten, is Bayonne. So it's the kind of flip side of that. Is it? And everyone knows that Bayonne's support is famously good. And is that actually hampering them anywhere other than Stade Jean d'Urgey? But here are Richard's thoughts on that.
A little bit of a whinge now, and that's to a club that we all really love, admire, amazing fan base, amazing ground, amazing part of the world. But Bayonne getting absolutely humped. Home-ish in San Sebastian. Slightly concerned, albeit the game against Pau last year was a little bit narrower than the feat this time round, but slightly concerned that night fixture is going to get shelled if they keep acting up like that. I'm not angry, I'm just a little bit disappointed in them. And hot off the press, or hot off having a flick through Rosbif Rugby Twitter this morning, it appears that the aforementioned Ioris Sagons has just signed a 5-year contract there. Maybe they've seen what he's been doing in those away wins for Stade and think that could be the Stardust, but I think that's something they've got to address.
Yeah, Ioris Sagons was there. He was in the crowd watching his new team for next season, which I found quite interesting that he's a current player just going to watch his new team with quite a decent chunk of the season to go. But I think it kind of sums up that are they just so reliant? Are Bayonne so reliant on Stade Jean d'Urgey? They, bearing in mind the amount of hype that was on their social media last week for this, and for the more than just last week, like a lot of weeks, they really just did not show up. They looked so not up for it. You know, they looked a bit heavy, and I kind of thought, well, maybe they've just kind of got a bit too big on foie gras a la plancha and mushrooms and chocolaton steaks in town, a few too many pinchos and some Basque cider at lunch, and they've kind of rocked up to the game a bit heavy because they just look so off the pace. I think it must be said that the quality of the Toulon team generally, but the Toulon back line was just, this was kind of dominated by their forwards, and their forwards were brilliant, but Serran at 9, Bigger at 10, Payour at 12, Fayanga Nuku at 13, you had Villiers on one wing who was excellent, you've got Jaminet back in form at fullback, and then two or three on the other wing. Like, that is a star-studded backline by anyone's books. And it was a pretty much all international front row, not far off. Teddy Bourbigny, the only one that hasn't played international rugby. So it was full of stars. They sent their A team, and their A team fully delivered. They were brilliant.
Yeah, I caught quite a lot of this game. And it, I got to say, Bjorn did look, I mean, I can imagine you and Richard crying into your Easter eggs over this one, but Bjorn really looked off the pace. But to be fair, they got thumped by what is a very large pack. You know, that back row, you've got Dupreez, Abadi, Olivon, you know, you've got...
Olivon looks big all of a sudden.
Yeah, like... it really... And do you know what? I'm going to float the Dan Bigger, fly the Dan Bigger flag here, but, you know, Bronte Serrano and Dan Bigger, that's a great halfback pairing when you're really on the front foot with a lot of big forwards. Like, it really is. And
Serran in particular. He looks so good both of the last 2 weeks. I know he's been behind a pack that's been monstrous, but...
But still, you still have to do the job, right? I it's very easy to say sometimes that, you know, oh, I could do a job if I had that pack, but you still have to do it. And they just... As bad as Bayonne looked, I thought Toulon looked... so good. I mean, also, but just quickly discuss friend of the show who came off the bench. Line out a bit improved this week for Toulon.
Did he play?
I think
Singleton, he won a line out.
Yeah, he came
Jack
off.
Singleton did win. I've got that in my notes. Singleton won a line out! Exclamation mark.
Yeah, I thought you'd enjoy that. He's a real friend of the Royal Speech podcast. And,
I've heard he's a great bloke. I'm just really worried about, I don't, you know what? Line out mistakes are not the hooker's fault more often than not. I think it's more to do with the communication from the rest of the forwards. But the line out was better, which it should be, because they've got Olivon and Abadi and Ribbons. I thought Jaminet was brilliant. He actually kind of very much in the same way that for France, we sometimes see Thomas Ramos play more of a playmaker role than Ntamack or Jalibert. I think Bigger was actually relatively quiet. I think that because he was kind of... Serran and Jaminet did so much.
Yeah. Jaminet was fantastic. And it's great to see him back in... He's a great player, but it's great to see him back in full flow. You know, obviously a little bit out of favour internationally. But
when he was bad, he looked bad early on in the season.
Yeah, like, which is nice to see him... Oh, yeah, 100% you can see why that is. But it's nice to see him back in full flow, playing with loads of confidence and... being a team that on their day are pretty unstoppable.
A few slightly left field takes on this game.
Yes.
First of all, in the Stade Francais Montpellier game, we saw a scrap between Makalou and Valença. They both went to the bin. And I always find it fascinating when you get former team, and they are very recently former teammates, when that happens. I'm always like, what has happened? Like, love to know what's being said there. But last week in Cast v Racing, we saw the battle of the necks between Levan Chilichava and Camuschat. I think this week we saw the battle of the designer facial hair, or just the best looking men in world rugby, because we saw Charles Olivon have a little bit of a scrap with Maxime Machinot. I don't know where my loyalties lie in looks, in facial hair, in that fight. I think it's a tough one to call on every level.
It's Olivon, obviously.
I think it's probably
Olivon. It's got to be.
He's an Adonis.
He's an Adonis. He's the man you want to be.
another couple of other kind of points. We with decent amount of Allais in this from the touchline, quite enjoyable. there were a few camera shots, and Richard, I'm sure, will be disappointed to have missed this. A few camera shots where you could just about see what was on Pierre Mignoni's clipboard. It looked to me like just a blank table, like a table was there, like a template, and it just had no words in it. But
was it just Allais?
Probably, yeah. Whatever he's done in the last few weeks has worked. Oh, he told them to stop smoking. That was it. He banned smoking at the club during training, during the Six Nations. And since then, points and thought it's true. It was in the media, and it was leaked from the squad. So there's been some sort of like snake on the inside of the changing room that's released that to the press. But it came out. And Toulon were not happy. Mignoni was not happy that it had come out.
Well, no wonder there's a snake.
They banned smoking.
I mean, for those who haven't been, I mean, when we were recently in France, people actually, this is no joke. So say if you're on your train in the morning, it stops at the station, you know, on its way through to the final destination. People in France just hang out the side of the doors having fags.
So At station stops.
So cigarettes to these people is like breathing air. And to ban it is the most, I can't think of something more, against the old libertaire fraternité, it's very...
Well, maybe it's worked. The other coach watch, Gregory Patat for Bayonne, looks like I was trying to think, like, what's the vibe I'm getting from Gregory Patat? And he's got a very gruff voice. You really hear it. Over the mic, and a lot of pointing. Like sometimes he's just not saying anything, but he's got the air of like the dad that is now mid 40s, and the dad was, the best player at the rugby club growing up, and was the star player in whatever team he played in, and he's kind of now a big bear of a man, and he's watching his pathetic, scrawny young child trying to catch a ball and failing. He's kind of got that air of the very, very disappointed dad of like, I was good, why are you not good?
You're not a son of mine.
Yeah, that is that sort of air on the touchline. He just looks very pissed off a lot. And that result for Bayonne does tip them back into a possible relegation battle, doesn't it, Reece? And there's a little bit of a swing that's happened in that relegation battle, perhaps, you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a bit of a swing. We can get onto the cast game, but Perpignan really give them an absolute hammering. You know, Perpignan and cast are there on 45, Perpignan 44. Bayonne have dropped now, and they're only a couple. There's them, Clermont Auvergne, who again look terrible. We can get onto that, but Lyon. So they're right back down in it. There's been a bit of a swing, but it's a bad result for Montpellier, as we said, but Bayonne are right back in it now. You know, they've
because they're not winning any away games,
no.
And then they take a home game, which could be vital. So apparently, the reason Richard was worried about them losing that game, I think there's a lot of cultural significance for Bayonne with that kind of Basque connection. Mm. Like when we were in San Sebastian before we went to Bayonne the following day, there was a lot of talk. There was a lot of people from Bayonne that come across the border for that kind of La Tamborada Basque celebration day. It's also like double the gate. So it's a lot of money and they've got to pay Manu Tuilagi's wages next season. And, you know, if you get another 20,000 fans, like they sold it out. It was, which is, I think the Real Arena is like 35,000. Stade Jean Dauger is about 16,000. So you're doubling the gate. That could in itself be paying the wages of like a Manu Tuilagi for next year.
It could, 100%. And obviously, you've got to take in the financial considerations, especially when you sometimes don't have as much firepower as some others do in the league. But equally,
if it costs you the top 14.
Yeah, especially when they're as poor away from home as they are. And if they lose that piece at home where, you know, that is their, that's their little fortress. That's where they're winning games. That's where they're finishing eighth, ninth. But then you're being dragged down into the relegation places because, you know, you can't get going outside your own stadium, even if it's somewhere that is very culturally linked, very closely linked in terms of geography, then what's really the point of the extra cash if you're down there in Pro De Tour and you're still, you know, obviously they'd be great down there, but it's obviously that's what one you have to balance as like a chief exec or when you run a club. But the money, extra wages, isn't going to do you any good if you're not in the top 14. And you know, if they can't win at home, then it's not going to happen for them. So there's got to be some answer somewhere, but without sort of Fortress, it really looks like they get themselves in trouble, and obviously we don't want to see that. So they're going to have a real think about. I don't know whether some of this is, you mentioned it earlier, where people get that sort of home crowd and it feels like every, you know, you're in a battle, you've got everyone behind you. And we've all been to those stadiums where it is visceral and it's, you can feel everything as a player and as a fan. And perhaps it is difficult away from that, but either they're going to have to find a way to get over that in San Sebastian, or because it's more difficult away from home, or they're going to have to really rethink, because they're not going to, if you can't win at one of your home grounds, whether you have one or two or three, then you're not going to make it in the top 14. It's just, it's a great thing.
It's really strange. It's got to be an emotional thing, because they've got a very pragmatic game plan of big pack that does a lot of mauling, a lot of pick and going, great maul defence. Even in this game against Toulon, they've got good halfbacks, very experienced old heads, if it's the kind of pairing of Machinot, or in this game it was Ruet, who's 35, Spanish international. You've got Cami Lopez, one of the most experienced 10s in the top 14. They're still not getting you results in those sorts of environments. It's got to be something emotional. They just look so off the pace. A team that doesn't look off the pace at the moment is Perpignan. I think that, from what I saw of that game, they look like they played total rugby. Like, from a team that has been languishing 13th the last couple of seasons, they're now in 9th. And they're looking up. The barrage is only, Bordeaux are only one win away in 6th, which is remarkable to think where those two teams were 4 weeks ago. They're looking great. Tommy Allen didn't even play as well. It was kind of, you know, Solo Tuilagi was on the bench. So it wasn't like the kind of two players they'd been relying on were playing.
No, and I think it's 3 wins on the spin for them now. And they did look dynamite, to be fair. I mean, there's a few standout players for them, but I did think there's some excellent tries, ball in hand, movement, pace, the lines they were running. You know, they did look top dollar, but equals
they
that.
They looked a team playing with confidence.
Like, yeah, they really did.
They look. That's what they look like.
Every time, and I know this is sort of a cliche and a bit simplistic, but it was one of those sides, sometimes you see them every time they've got a ball in hand, they look like they're going to score. And there's a freedom to it, there's a fluidity to it, that sometimes when you watch that and you're like, wow, it's just clicking. But equal to that, I thought cast were poor. Bad away from home, but I mean, I like Poplan, but there was some sloppy discipline for the yellow card when you don't really need that when you're under the cosh. I think as good as Perpignan looking forward, I think Cass got caught out a lot, out of position, not holding the defensive line. A couple of times people rushed up and didn't take man and ball and just left gaping holes in the defence, which Perpignan really tucked into very well. But it just felt that Cass really were off the pace. It was great. They stunning first try, by the way. But apart from that,
It felt like there were a lot of Fijians in this game, and it was sprinkled with some Fijian flair.
It really was. There was some stunning Fijian work in it.
Cass had a bit of a weakened team. Like, Batitu started at 10, who I kind of completely forgot, but was the starting fly half of Fiji in the quarterfinal against England in the World Cup. But it's only his second start in 4 at 10 in 4 seasons at Cast. So I think that shows pretty much where they were with their team selection. Very kind of French, let's just send a weird team away from home. Similarly, Bordeaux sent a very weird team to Lyon. Lyon had got a great home record.
Great pack.
But Bordeaux also started with Ben Tapouai at 10, who I looked back, he's 35. He has never had a professional start at fly half, which is mental. They had Zach Holmes on the bench. So I don't know what's going on there. We'll kind of look at next week in a bit. this weekend coming up in a bit, what's happening with their fly half situation and kind of what they're going to go for against Saracens. But Lyon are a good good team at home. Baptiste Kuyu scored his 11th try of the season. Bearing in mind he was in the France World Cup squad, he then got injured. So I don't know how many games he's played, but 11 tries is great. And if you see him on the score sheet, Baptiste Kuyu scored a try, you think, oh, well, that's classic 9 try. His try, he was in the middle of a mall. He was basically like playing as a hooker.
That mall was incredible. Like
it was motoring.
It was absolutely on wheels with some. That first 30 minutes, I think they were something like 17-0 up. And I mean, obviously, the scoreline, I think, ended 27-10. But that first 30 minutes, that pack was absolutely mortaring. That more for that try. And as you say, it's a great pack. But they're a good outfit. They're really solid at home. They've got a great set of forwards you can really rely on. But Bordeaux obviously did not put out their strongest before. The one thing I did want to raise, though, is the tracker hat on your man from Lyon, the coach, Gengenbacher, is it? Have I got that right? Have I said that right?
I don't know. Yeah, probably. Yeah, I don't actually know.
So he wears this tracker hat, and he looks a bit like a cross between... Have you ever watched The Punisher on Netflix?
No.
He looks like a cross between, like... All right, he looks like a cross between Pierre Louis Polina and Vin Diesel. And it's really... We'll go back, honestly, you won't believe it, but... There was also a comedy interception try in the 80th minute where it was like fumbling around. It was just like Niyashvili at the end. It was absolute comedy stuff. So, but
it was actually a fairly even game, and that kind of put a bit of a slant on the scoreline that perhaps kind of wasn't there. But yeah, I think Leon's team is so young. Like Niyashvili's 21. It feels like he'd been around for ages. The other game that I'm talking of people playing out positions and fly halfback issues, Racing against Clermont. So Racing scored in the first 35 seconds. Henry Arundel, no one wanted to pass him the ball. Gael Ficou had him on the outside, saw Nolan Le Garrick on the inside, Henry Arundel on the outside, and thought, he's French, I'm giving it to the French guy. So even Racing, with the guidance of Stuart Lancaster, don't want to give Henry Arundel the ball. But Le Garrick injured his shoulder in that try. He got tackled kind of within 30 seconds, went off for the rest of the game, which is interesting because they don't really have a backup nine, although Antoine Joubert has played nine. He is their backup nine. He went into nine. Tristan Tedder came on, who played brilliantly. He's done a pretty good job filling in at 10 for someone that's the amount of star signings they have at Racing. He's kind of runs below the radar. I thought he was brilliant. His goal kicking was good as well. But Gilbert then went off injured, which is big for them because they then haven't got a nine, and I don't think they've got one next week. So they're going back to essentially having Max Spring a fullback at nine, or they go for what they did this week when Juan Imhoff, in his last ever game at Paris La Défense, played at nine. And on the commentary, they said he's never played at nine. However, famously, I'm going to test you on this, famously, he played at nine in a top 14 final. Do you know which scrum half was on the bench? So Maxime Machinot got sent off in like the 10th minute of the final. And instead of bringing a nine off the bench that they had an international nine on the bench. They actually moved Wanim off to nine for the rest of the game because they didn't want to use up the substitution. And they'd seen that Imhoff had played nine in some sevens games. Do you know who that international nine on the bench that wasn't pulled into the game and they decided that Juan Imhoff was a better scrum half option then? It's someone you are well familiar with and a distant relation to one of our friends.
No, not Mike.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Mike Phillips was on the bench and they didn't bring him on. They might have brought him on eventually, but they played him off at nine and they won the top 14 final in the new camp.
That is a stunning stat. I mean, maybe they were worried there was a taxi driver playing for the opposition and Mike Phillips might want to fight. But I mean, it was that's a great stat. Poor Mike.
But I don't know what we'll move on to. We'll look at the European Cup games next week in a bit. But also, Jordan Joseph giving them a lot of big unit, had so much promise a few years ago, had a few issues with injuries, had a really good loan spell at Poe, has had a few more injuries, but he looked massive. And I'm not talking about the moment where his shorts nearly got pulled down and we nearly saw his front. But yeah, he was great. And he's the kind of physicality they need at Racing, which is something they don't have a lot of. Clermont weren't terrible, but they're just so reliant on their ball carriers, which I said last week, Yato and Moala. And I didn't watch the... I've not seen any of the La Rochelle-Oyonnax game, because why would I?
Yeah, I watched a couple of little sparks of it. There is a... Obviously, Oyonnax down, the Beethoven death marches on. But what I would say is just having had a little look at it, there is a great try from Thomas Villon where there is, which I'd love to see, the Haddad little... I love a flanker with a little grubber. It's a stunning try.
I think that was number one, wasn't it, this week?
I think it could have been. It was everything about it. There was... take the high ball, pop. Great. I love to see a flanker just there with it being popped, running a great line. Grubber, obviously, Wales being famous for its great back rowers, great footballers. What I would say is, though, I think it was early in the second half, La Rochelle were obviously absolutely coasting in the first half, and they really took
28-0 up after 29 minutes, weren't they?
Yeah, and they really took their foot off the gas in the start of the second half. And to be fair, Oyonnax punished them. You know, I think they scored three tries within about 15, 20 minutes. La Rochelle turned it back on. But it's nice they didn't go down without a fight, and they did come out. And that might be more La Rochelle taking their foot off the gas, but they did come out fighting. But obviously, I think it's fair to say they're going to be down in Pro Day 2 next year.
Right, we need to talk about the exciting stuff, which is Pro Day 2, because it was a fascinating weekend, which is coming up after this. Right, Pro Day 2. Rhys, you are almost... after our excursion, almost more of a Pro Day 2 fan than you are a top 14 fan now, especially as your beloved Argent playing Pro Day 2. What did you see this weekend, other than the fact that all games were settled by 4 points or less in every fixture, which is crazy? Other than that, what caught your eye in this weekend's Pro Day 2 fixtures?
Yeah, well, what a stunning weekend. It's a couple of things to take away. I think at the bottom end of the table, it's very hard to see. Obviously, we've got Rouen, who are basically down. Montauban find themselves in a really big hole. Now, they lost to Dax at home, even though the boot of a friend of the show and great fly half, Bosvial, smacked 19 points. It's really difficult to see them.
He had a decent game at fullback.
Yeah, well,
it's wild given how he played when we saw it.
Yeah, considering it was one of the worst end performances I've seen. But that said, they've got a horrible run in. You know,
their easiest home game that they've got remaining. Really,
they've got Nevers at home, they've got Van at home, they've got Mont-de-Marsan at home, they've got Clomier away, they've got Provence away. Really difficult to see how they come out of this intact. I thought there was Mont-de-Marsan Brive 22-22. What a game.
Last minute try for Brive.
Yeah, last minute try for Brive. Do you know the thing about this week is there is so much in the last couple of minutes. So also in Nevers, Valence Roman were losing 13-12 with 1 minute to go. And Van der Merwe got a red card for Nevers in the 78th minute. And Valence Roman's kicked a penalty to win 15-13.
So that's one of the few games I haven't seen anything of. That's wild.
So it's a wild finish, which would have been obviously a great result for Nevers, which would have put them above Mont-de-Marsan. And maybe four adrift of Provence, but it would have given them a 6-7 point gap between seventh, which would have been pretty big for them. Given how tight it is down the bottom, at the bottom end of that going up zone. Again, you know, there was There was a few last minute things in there. Grenoble came from behind in the last 15 at home, 21-18. So I think there was a lot of last minute
action. That was
I
mean, a pretty even game, that, for Saxby. Yeah. A man that we mentioned in our pity fours last week, George Tilsley, made his debut, disappointingly, for Saxby, but he actually made a really nice, powerful run through the middle to set up their first try, and he looked quite good, which is hard to digest. But yeah, just a couple of breakdown pens in front of the sticks cost Saxby in that game. The barrage is an interesting set. That Dax away win at Montauban is actually, it puts them into sixth, which is quite amazing for a promoted side. And it leapfrogs them ahead of Brive,
who I really, we sort of had a little WhatsApp discussion about this, and Brive, I think, will make it into the playoffs. But they've got a lot of good players. They've got a lot of money. And I do wonder a little bit whether they should be a touch higher up in the table than they are.
They should be, yeah. They had a stinking start to the season. And I think I had an interview with Danny Brennan, kind of said they kind of, basically through arrogance, really, they kind of hadn't quite prepared themselves for how tough Pro Day Deux was going to be. I think the thing on Brive, so Carbono, who scored the try at the end, started and looked full of running for that try at the end. But they finished that game 22-all away at Mont-de-Marsan, a tough place to go, good team, placed above them in the league. They finished that game with two 19-year-old halfbacks. Tom Raffey kicked the conversion. Carbono was captain in the under-20s for France for a lot of the games in this year's Six Nations. They've got Thurte, who played 15 for France in a lot of the Six Nations games. He was at 13 as well. So to have two young halfbacks steering the ship away from home in a tough place to go and get a draw, I think is, they've got a good, they've got Poe and Brive are the two teams that seem to be churning out quite a decent amount of really young players that look like they're going to be the kind of spine of the team well into the future. And that as much of the big bucks of signing Moriarty and Courtney Laws and the like, and having the big money coaching staff at Brive, that kind of youth system is positive for them.
Yeah, it's really positive. And having Courtney Laws, Moriarty is only going to add to that. You've got those players with, you know, Moriarty, good solid eight, but good international experience. Courtney Laws, I mean, all of that experience is coming into those Brive youngsters, which is only going to make them stronger. They also went to Mont-de-Marsan, which is the host of the world's largest flamenco dancing festival outside of Spain. So that's one for listeners to travel to Mont-de-Marsan for. And Rob, you're a bit of a dancer yourself. But just wanted to dance on quickly.
Well, I've wanted to go to Mont-de-Marsan for a while, and now that I know that, Reese, that's rocketed up my wish list.
Well, there we go. It's straight up to the top now, because Rob can cut a couple of shapes on the dance floor. Very, very able. But dancing
about what's next coming out of your mouth, Reese.
But dancing across, yeah, I won't say anymore. All above board. Dancing across a little bit to my recently beloved Agen, a very tight win at home against Rouen, who were bottom of the table. I think this one, though, I managed to catch a couple of highlights of this where I think Agen were mostly in control of the game.
Yeah, it looked that way, didn't it?
Yeah, the boot of Thomas Vincent, obviously very, very settling for us at Agen fans. But also, I think they were pretty good in the pack. I think the Rouen try came pretty late on in the game, and they seemed to hold up well. So I think Agen have had a decent little run. They've got a couple of wins on the bounce, and that keeps them really in that sort of barrage point where, and they've got a big game coming up next week against Colombia, which are away from home, but I think that's 8th versus 10th, but it's a hair between Dax and Agen. There's really not much in it now.
Yeah.
And Brive, yeah, indeed. So you've got Dax, Brive, Colombia, Agen, Grenoble. And it's not.
I think Colombia will slide down a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it'll be an interesting game, that Agen Colomio one coming up next weekend.
Yeah, Colomio, obviously the place where one of my favourite all-time rugby players started his career, Yannick Jouzion, before he went to Sluis, he had a couple of years at Colomio, obviously the same city. But that is going to be a really interesting game. Grenoble, I think, is a really interesting one because they're away at Nevers, and obviously they had the points deduction at the start of the season, but have still got themselves into a really good position where they could still, they're still really pushing for that promotion spot, or the playoff spot, sorry, I should say. And there's some really tasty games coming up next week. Rob, is there any you think you've got your eye on? There's a couple of beauties, but what do you think?
That's Breve on Thursday night. Breve love a Thursday night game. They seem to play a lot of games on a Thursday. That's a big one. So that's sixth versus seventh. A point separates them. And sixth being obviously that barrage spot gives them a chance of promotion. That'll be interesting to see where both teams are at. Colomiers-Agen, I think, is that that's the test of Agen, really. Like, can they go to Colomiers and get that win? From a personal perspective, Saxe V, yes, Montauban have got a tough fixture away at Provence, but Van going to Saxe V, Stade Chanzy, can they get something? Can they get a win? You know, they beat Provence at home. Can they also beat Van at home? Feel like a home win in some of those home wins that they those home games they've got in their run in against the tougher teams. I think they've also got Béziers at home at some point. They can pick up a win against one of those. It is a real bonus for them and will help them stay above Montauban. But I think the game of the round is probably the Dax Breve one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think those are. So I think it's a test for Dax as well. I mean, they've done incredibly well considering they came up last year, and Breve, really good side, and that 6-7, it's a mouth-watering clash, particularly for a Thursday night. For those purists out there, can you imagine anything better than on a Thursday night? You've just finished work, you're heading down to Dax, and you've got...
Also, that. Like, from you know, it's one of the beauties of Pro Day Dirt, the fact that they've got that Thursday night protected game for the TV audience as well. Just imagine coming home, 8 p.m, tough day at work, you know, you're tucking into... You've had a couple of pints after work and you just sit down, slump on the sofa, epic game of rugby on a Thursday evening just to ease into the Friday. Very, very nice. I just wanted to touch on the teams, some of the teams coming up from National and how things look there, because there are two games left in National. So we got a correspondence on TikTok, at Rugby's Rugby on TikTok, to correct us, to say that there is actually an access match newly introduced this season in news that hasn't made its way over to the UK, but do a bit of research, Rob, and get better at French, and you might see that there is a access match between the 15th place team, which we reckon is going to be Montauban, and then the loser of the playoffs in Pro Day Deux. So the Pro Day Deux, sorry, National, and the National playoffs follow the same format as Pro Day Deux. So in National, Nice, which would be a lovely, nice little addition to Pro Day Deux, give you another option. They are currently top on 87, albeit on 86 in second. However, they have in their fixtures their Blagnac fixture. So they have effectively played, that includes their points for the win against Blagnac in a game that hasn't happened yet and won't ever happen. Whereas with two games in hand on them, Narbonne are 7 points behind. So Narbonne, in theory, could easily overtake Albi, even though there are only a few games left. Albi, if they do end up replacing, you know, if the access match ends up being Albi versus Montauban, that's basically, geographically, that's not far off a like-for-like replacement. So I'm happy with that. Nice little addition. Maybe even a little trio if the fixtures fall of Albi on the Friday night, Montauban and National on the Saturday, Toulouse on Sunday evening. Or you could have, similarly, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, maybe even Sunday if you get lucky. But that's kind of an interesting one. Narbonne, one of the great teams historically. Former winners of the Challenge Cup, I think they are.
Yeah, 2001.
Yeah.
I think was, 2001? Yeah, pretty sure it was.
And Carcassonne are just about still in the reckoning for the second spot, which would be a home semi-final, skip the first round of the barrage. Although Narbonne played Carcassonne on the last weekend. So that is interesting. Oh, no, this weekend, sorry. So that will kind of sort it out a little bit. Nice also play Albion in the last round. But it's some pretty interesting venues. Yeah. All kind of roughly in the same area-ish. Nice is a bit further out, but Narbonne, Carcassonne and Albi kind of all relatively accessible to each other. All places that I would love to go and watch rugby. We had obviously an accidental detour to Carcassonne. And I've seen everything I need to see of Carcassonne, apart from the old town, which is the main highlight, and their rugby ground, which I presume is the second highlight. But other than that, I've seen enough of Carcassonne. But I'd love to go to Narbonne and love to see them back in Pro D2.
Do you know the Rocky Elsom story about Narbonne?
No.
Right, so you can enjoy this. So first of all, Narbonne, I've got a bit of an interest in because the Welsh legendary lock and Neath lock, where I'm from, Gareth Llewellyn, went to Narbonne after he finished at Neath. As did, interesting, Brian Redpath, of Cameron Redpath. But Rocky Elsom finished
Former captain of Scotland, I think he was.
Yeah, well, you know.
Probably famous in his own right, rather than as good as Cam Redpath is.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm trying to bring it up to date for the modern viewer.
The
TikTok viewers, for some of those who might not have seen Brian Redpath in his prime, unlike you, Rob.
In the 90s, yeah.
Yeah. Much like Nick DeLuca later on. So Rocky Elsom finished his career at Narbonne, and then he formed a consortium.
Former Australian international. He was player of the tournament the year that Leinster won one of their Heineken Cups. He was unbelievable in 2009.
A great player and a bit of a legend. But anyway, he formed a consortium. A couple of people took over Narbonne with the aim of making them one of the powerhouses of French rugby. You know, I think it was around 2015, 2016, when money is pouring in and they're like, wow, we're going to take this side and we're going to make them into one of the powerhouses of French rugby. Anyway, things might have been a bit earlier than that, but anyway, things didn't go so well. And there's a couple of really random tales about it. First of all, it all ended in a bit of a cloud with one of the lawyers of Narbonne suing the club because he stated that Rocky Elsom came in with one of their Tongan players at the time and started screaming, "Where's my check? Where's my check?" And then it all sort of got a bit murky about where money went. It ended in administration, huge debts. But I think this is a quote that will really sum it up by a writer at the time, writing for the local paper, who said, "We have never seen such a secretive president. His media revelations were as rare as those of the Queen of England. He appeared at the last moment just before matches, pretending not to speak French," which I think is a very Australian thing to do. And then he finished with a slightly sort of small town mafia quote of, "He's left for new mysterious ventures. Who can know where he is right now? He's certainly not reappeared in Narbonne." So it's a weird tale of somebody who obviously went in there and it all ended a bit in catastrophe, and they've made their way back over the last sort of 5 years into a bit of a better place financially, but supposed to be a great place. So it'd be great to see them up there from a great part of the world as well, or a great part of France, and with lots of links with other lovely locations to go to, as you pointed out.
Yeah. Well, former European Challenge Cup winners Narbonne leads us nicely into an exciting weekend of European action, which is coming up. And that's what we're all really here for. We've filled a lot of time with some of the brilliant stuff in French rugby, but this is where France meets England, France meets Europe, France meets South Africa now as well. So coming up, we are going to preview the Champions Cup games just after this. And let's finish it off with some pity fours, and we will get an interesting pity four, which I might require a little bit of explanation from our Costa Rican correspondent, Richard Croney.
And finally, one for the pity fours. A guy called Sebastian Menard had popped up on Twitter, or X, I should call it, recently. And by recently, I mean in the last day, I think. Well, look, yesterday. They are playing Montpellier in, I think it's this weekend, maybe it's No, it won't be this weekend because it's European Cup, isn't it? But in a few weeks, I've been given an allocation of 625 tickets to be, I assume, in a block together, which is pretty good going. As we know, the GGL, if it's still called that, very rarely sells out. Lovely ground, very row club. But yeah, hitting capacity is not often top of the pile. Sebastian Menard is the deputy mayor of Perpignan, and he has called out Montpellier Rugby Club for closing off, closing the ticket office, blocking online bookings, with an anticipated 2,500 Catalan wanting to get tickets for what you would assume, even though Perpignan now looking up the table, arguably, is a real crunch fixture. So yeah, lovely little bit of a diplomatic play, some real skullduggery. Yeah, one to keep an eye on.
Is he climbing a mountain in Costa Rica or something?
It was the panting got heavier, didn't it?
Yeah, well, that sounds like it's quite some honeymoon, eh?
But lovely story about some rogue goings on at Montpellier yet again. Just key game. No, we're only going to give you 625 tickets in our 18,000 seater stadium, which we can't sell out. Brilliant stuff. I have one pity for. Do you have any, Reese?
No, I think one thing I did want to ask you though, talking about Montpellier and your other favorite thing, I'm going to bring some food into this. Have you ever tried Montpellier butter?
No, don't think I have.
Apparently, Montpellier has a, and I sort of wanted to bring this in earlier, just a little foodie thing. It is, Escoffier said, the only butter you can have with cold salmon, which is an awful thought. It's butter, which is Rob's favourite thing, mixed with shallots, gherkins, mixed capers, herbs, anchovies, and hard-boiled egg. So if you
not
are...
for you, Ruth.
No, it's really not for me. But if you're struggling for something this weekend and you want something and you're sitting down to watch that Montpellier game as they're playing Ulster on Sunday and you're like, what can go with my cold salmon? You can think, I'll really go full Montpellier and I'm going to whack in some... You'll obviously pay for the most expensive ingredients and cook them badly, much in the way Montpellier do, but I think you're going to go for the Montpellier butter.
Wow. Fascinating insight that, Reese. Not necessarily a cold salmon, but I quite like the idea of the Montpellier butter. I have one little, all of my tidbits were all on the April Fools, which have dominated my social media, but I have one little news story that I saw involving Angen, Reese.
Oh, wow. I'm excited for this.
So, during the game against Rouen on Friday night, Evan Olmsted, second row, used to play for Newcastle. Did he play for Sale? I don't know. But he definitely played for Newcastle. Canadian. Got sin-binned. And his sin-bin overlapped with half-time. And he didn't return after half-time, after his sin-bin period was over. Which, obviously, knowing French rugby and knowing Argen... conspiracy. So he got yellow card in the 31st minute. So he should ordinarily come back pretty much straight after our time. Incidentally, Argen also had a yellow card in the 38th minute. He didn't come back after half time and kind of got replaced by the replacement second row came off the bench when his yellow card period elapsed. And this is a much better yellow card story than what happened with Ernie Herbst doing a 7 minute sin bin at the stoop for Harlequins. Obviously, being Argen and being French rugby, rumours were rife as to what happened to Evan Olmsted at halftime. You know, was there a fight? Did he storm out? Was he actually injured? What do you think happened, Rhys?
Wife give birth.
His wife went into labour and he was...
Are you joking?
And the team manager informed him of this and he was during his sin bin period. And he scooted off to go and see the birth of his child.
I genuinely did not know that. But if you do not believe in God, then there is your proof. The sin bin, he's just felt that surge to do something silly just to come off as the baby is born. He's like, do you know what? I'm going to dive over the top. You yell or he comes off. The wife's giving birth.
And what a happy, cheery... pity for and a nice warming digestif to wash it all down with to finish off this week's podcast. That was a much, much cheerier set of pity falls than last week's slightly controversial stuff. But well done for making it to the end of this. You can find us on Instagram at RosbeefsRugby. You can email us RosbeefsRugby@gmail.com. We're at RosbeefsRugby on TikTok. We're at RosbeefsRugby on X. And we are at RosbeefsRugby on YouTube. Basically, at RosbeefsRugby. Thank you very much for your time, Reese. You may make it back next week. But for now, au revoir.
Au revoir.